This is Phil Farrand. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I don't think I'm coming in tomorrow unless something goes wrong tonight. We actually made some changes today. We had a little hiccup last night. And I got on and checked. Hear that squealing? It's getting worse. So I'm just waiting to see how long I'm going to go before I take it back there and say that squealing is getting worse. Only when I turn to the right. And a buddy this last week said, does it happen when you go backwards? And I said, I don't know. I need to check. I checked. It does not happen when I go backwards. I just haven't called him back and said, okay, what does that mean then? So I got to do that too. Anyways, we had a little hiccup last night. Turns out that we were just dodging the bullet all these months when we've been running successfully because there was a server that was getting rebooted every Tuesday night just prior to 9 o'clock. And we need to write some stuff to that server. And the server is only down for like a minute, you know. But it just happened to be getting rebooted around us. Sometimes before us, sometimes after us. Well, last night was the night it hit us. Bam! So that threw a couple of processes. And so we got it fixed. So I think it was, I discovered the problem about 10 and had to figure out what happened and called one of my coworkers and we figured out how we were going to fix it, got it fixed, and so I headed to bed about 11. So I was a little, towards the end of the day, I was ready to go home. I love going home on Thursdays. I love going home on Thursdays because it's the start of my weekend and I just love being at home with my wife. It's good. Anyways, enough of that. Been working along this week. Found a cool, I think maybe I mentioned it last week, that I found this guy who does really cool pictures. And he has tutorials. And so I went ahead and ordered one of those tutorials. I'm going to go through it. Hopefully I will be up to his standards. And then I can get the next tutorial for free. So we'll see. It's interesting. Once he sent me the high resolution results of his stuff, I looked at it and went, oh. Because it was a little chroma key-ish. You know, it was when sometimes in the old days with the chroma key, when they would do it, you couldn't necessarily see a line around it, but it was very much kind of like Xacto knife precision to where the edge was, it wasn't quite blended. So I don't know. I think it's still cool, and he's got a ton to teach me about masking and all that stuff, but I'm wondering if maybe it just needs some kind of little atmospheric effect on it to kind of smear that down a little bit, or the edges just need to be softened just a little bit. So I'll see. I'm planning on starting that tutorial tomorrow. Should be fun. I've had another little project I'm just finishing up real quick. Just real short writing project. I just had this idea and I haven't written anything in a long time and I was just like, so I'm writing something. So I've just been blowing through this project, this little writing project. Yeah, I doubt it will ever see the light of day because it was just a little short story, 4 chapters, you know, but just something to do for writing. I've never done this kind of style before where it's first person and certainly never done anything on this subject matter, and you know, so I'll just put it in my file and probably won't ever do anything with it, but it's been fun to do some writing. So that's all good. It's all good. This week, I've also been talking to buddies about the supernatural again. And I think it got started last Wednesday night. I don't know. I was talking to a buddy, and his philosophy is that really I should just put up or shut up. Now, that's my terminology, not his. But when I told him that terminology, he kind of nodded. His philosophy is, I'm never really going to experience the supernatural until I put myself in a position where I have to experience the supernatural. And for him, what that means is I should just quit my job and maybe just go on a walkabout. You know, or something. Because the fact that, you know, I've got a good job, make good money, pay my bills, all that kind of stuff, puts me in a position where I'm really not ready to believe for the supernatural. And so I don't see it. And I can talk and 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 talk. And it's not going to make any difference until I actually make the jump. That's his philosophy. So I've been talking to friends about that this week, saying, so, what do you think of that opinion? And my wife had a little get-together on Saturday for me with some friends that we've known for years and years and years. Just small, but it was fun. It's good to see people and chat. We got on this subject because I steered it towards this subject. And a buddy of mine was telling me about his aunt. I think it was his aunt, who was, you know, woman of God, really spent a lot of time with God, and she had the type of relationship that, to hear him tell it, she just pretty much felt like God should just do what she wants. But she recognized that God was her source and very much reliant on God. And so he told a story that she got up one day and she decided that she wanted to play chess. So she told God, God, I want to learn how to play chess. You need to teach me. And so she went to the store and bought herself one of those little chess games that have the little computer in it. And so she played against the computer for a while and got better and better. And eventually she was beating the computer at the highest level consistently. So then she decided she would start enrolling in some chess tournaments in Iowa. And according to my buddy, by the time it was all said and done, she had actually won the Iowa State Chess Tournament. Little old lady. So he said she tells another story that she was at a bowling tournament, and she was supposed to go and speak at this church, and she ran late at the bowling tournament, and she walked out, and she had like a half an hour to get, I forget what he said, 70 or 80 miles. By car. And so she got in her car and she said, God, I need to be over at that church. And I've only got a half hour. Now you need to get me over there in a half an hour. And he said, she says that she started driving. As she recollects, she didn't think she ran over the speed limit, but she was there in a half an hour. So different people have different reactions to this story. My reaction was one of amusement, and if that's what she said happens, sure. I'm not in conflict with that at all. But my daughter had a little bit different reaction to it when I was talking to her, because she's in the the crush of having two kids now, and one 3, 1 7 months, and the younger one, Asher, he is a very determined young man, and he knows what he wants in life, and if he doesn't get it, he will let you know. And so, I mean, she's not getting a whole lot of sleep at night. And, she's taken up drinking coffee because it's the only way she can get through the day. That'll wear on you after a while. But when she and I were chatting about this, you know, her response was, or she could just leave the bowling alley earlier. I said, yes, that's true. You know, kind of a response of, we need to take responsibility for ourselves and not expect God to bail us out just because we're not using good management techniques. Another buddy this week, when I was telling him about that story, he kind of shrugged it off and said, you know, we've had anecdotal stories like that, but there's a lot of things that could explain that, and maybe she just wasn't paying attention to the time. Maybe she wasn't paying attention to her speed, you know. As far as learning chess, maybe she's just a really brilliant person. So there's a kind of an expectation there that a lot of things that we attribute to being miracles, you know, it's just our perception that they're a miracle when in fact they're not. It's very interesting. Very interesting. Another buddy this week sent me a link to a YouTube video, and we have talked about the supernatural in the past. So he sent me this link, and it's interesting. I mean, I have diddled around enough in quantum mechanics and, you know, just on the outside as an observer, I don't get the math at all. That, you know, a lot of the concepts were not unfamiliar to me. But it was interesting, some of the philosophical ramifications that have come about in recent years, as in from 2008, 2009 on, about what quantum mechanics is really saying about our existence. And so I watched this and I thought, oh, that's pretty interesting. The name of the video on YouTube was Quantum Mechanics Debunks Materialism. And I think the channel that it was on was called Inspiring Philosophy. Quantum Mechanics Debunks Materialism. Now, just quickly as a review, materialism is the belief, it's a fairly extreme point of view, it's the belief that only matter and energy and their rearrangements exist. Period. There is nothing besides matter and energy and their rearrangements. Materialism says we live in a concrete universe that is made up of matter and energy, and that's it. You know, there's no supernatural, there's no miracles, there's no nothing. It is constant, it is, obeys immutable laws, period. It is a subset of realism, which says basically the same thing, except has a little more wiggle room in it, that there may be processes that we don't fully understand yet, and there may be other things besides matter that exist, and yada, yada, yada. And this view that the universe is And it doesn't need an outside creator. It doesn't need a cosmic consciousness. It exists by itself and for itself. This view has pretty much been the prevailing view all through the scientific revolution, that all we have to do is go out and figure out what the laws of the universe are, and that will tell us everything we need to know about life, and anything that we might think that exists apart from that, love, spirituality, any of those things, well, they just don't. It's just an illusion. What's interesting is that quantum mechanics has kind of thrown a monkey wrench in this. Because materialism says that matter and energy exist by itself. Quantum mechanics introduces the idea of the observer. That the observer affects reality. And that's because quantum mechanics postulates that in its unobserved state, reality is simply waves of probability. Down in the quantum foam, or in the quantum field, things are moving around there, but they're waves. They're not matter, they're not energy, they are waves of probability. And that it is only in the presence of an observer that all those waves collapse into something that then manifests itself in the physical world. And I know that sounds like a bunch of hokum if you're not familiar with this, but there is the classic double slit experiment that I've talked about before that I'm just going to go over really quickly. You can do more reading on the double slit experiment, it's called, if you're interested. What it comes down to is this. Multiple years ago, scientists were trying to figure out if electrons and protons and photons were waves of energy or were they particles. And so they designed this fairly ingenious test where you had a screen that was going to be impacted by these photons or electrons, and then in front of that screen you had a barrier. And in the barrier they put two slits, two narrow vertical slits. And then they took a little electron gun or photon gun and they fired it at this barrier, knowing something about the differences in patterns that would be made by waves or particles. Because if you think about it, if you take like a marble gun and you shoot it at something that has two slits and you just spray it back and forth, those marbles are only going to go through where the slits are, and they're going to go through and impact the screen in the back and leave a pattern on that screen. And that pattern is going to be basically two slits. Well, if in fact what's being shot at that screen is not particles but waves, so if you think about like water rushing towards this double slit barrier, what's going to happen is that water is going to rush through those slits, and there's actually going to be waves that are going to get wider and wider as the water moves away from those slits. The waves are going to collapse on top of each other on the other side of the barrier, or they're going to impact each other, and wherever two ridges of waves meet, they're going to amplify each other. Wherever two valleys meet, they're going to amplify that valley. But wherever you have a ridge and a valley meeting, they're going to cancel each other out. And it produces a very distinct pattern called an interference pattern. that when that hits then against the back wall, you have patterns of more prominent force and less prominent force in bands. It goes across vertically. More and less and more and less, more and less, more and less. And the bands in the center are stronger, and the bands as they move out get weaker. So it's very clear. Either you're going to get two strips of impacts, or you're going to get this banding interference pattern. Okay, so they set up their little experiment, shoot their electron guns at the double slit. Sure enough, they get a waveform. Okay. So then they bring it all the way down to where they're only shooting one electron at a time. They still get a waveform. Okay. So then they're trying to figure some things out, and someone decides, hey, let's put a measuring device before the slits, and let's figure out, as it goes through the slits, where the electron, which slit the electron is going through. So they do that, and as soon as they do that, the pattern on the back changes from waves to particle impacts. In other words, the act of establishing an observation actually changes how that electron behaves. They even have done experiments where they have taken the detector and they've put it behind the screen. Not by the barrier at all, behind the screen, so that the electron would pass through. I'm getting my mail. The electron would pass through the barrier, and then it would impact the screen. And just before it impacts the screen, they have pulled back the detector to figure out where the electron is. And even when they do that, it changes from a waveform to a particle, which means... And this is where things really start getting spooky, which means that somehow the electron knew it was going to be measured before it went through the double slit, and it changed its properties accordingly. Now, scientists are saying, okay, what's going on? What's going on? Well, the prevailing theory at this point is that I'm backing into my garage. Is that what is going on is that electron, if it is not observed, in fact exists as waves of probabilities. And it can be described by the sum of all its waves of probabilities. And the act of observation not only collapses it into a physical particle at the time it's being observed, but also collapses it into a physical particle and creates a back history for its existence that it has been a physical particle. I know this sounds like gobbledygook, but what was interesting about this little talk is that if everything he said was true, there is a cadre of quantum mechanics scientists who now are convinced that observation and consciousness actually creates our existence. And that it is a level of consciousness that needs to be in place to create it. In other words, it's not enough to have a lot of little electron gun out there. You have to have someone studying what the electron gun says. Okay, now, that is in stark contrast to materialism. In fact, it's much more aligned with what is called idealism, and that is, I think, therefore I am. That is, a mind exists to create our reality. And in fact, it backs you up. If you run it all the way through, it backs you up to a really interesting position. There's this other thought experiment called Schrodinger's cat. And the whole idea is if you put one a molecule of uranium in a box, you don't know when it's going to decay. If you then put a Geiger counter in there to measure when it decays, because there's quantum particles, and then put a cat in there with a vial of poison that will be set off by the Geiger counter, and then you seal it all up so nobody can see, is the cat dead or alive? Because there's been no observation to determine when the molecule of uranium is going to decay, because without observation, the molecule of uranium is simply the sum of all its probabilities. It doesn't actually exist in the physical world. And what some scientists are saying is it's not just the act of measurement, the Geiger counter, but the act of observation by a consciousness when they open the box and look in. At that point, the waveforms then collapse and you determine whether or not the cat is alive or dead. Now, I know this sounds crazy, but scientists, some of the best and brightest minds that are working on this stuff, are coming to these kinds of conclusions. The problem is that if I as a human being look at the cat and I have consciousness and I know the cat's alive, then who's looking at me to tell whether I'm alive or not? And who's looking at that person and who's looking at that person and who's looking at that person? And you really only have two choices at that point. Either you elevate yourself up to a class, some kind of cosmic consciousness that is observing everything, or you end up in what's called solipsism. And solipsism is simply the idea that the entire universe only exists in my mind, and I'm the only one that's real. Now, the other way to go after this, aside from solipsism, is to say that, in fact, there is a cosmic consciousness that is creating the reality. And we are participating in it. There was one interesting side note in the little video where they were saying, okay, well, there have been some objections that say, well, if a cosmic consciousness exists out there and it is looking at everything, then how in the world do we even notice these quantum effects, because that cosmic consciousness should be resolving the quantum effects, and so we'd never see them. One of the things that I thought was an interesting observation was that perhaps what God has done in our existence when he created it is that he has limited himself in the experience of our existence to only what we are observing. That he observes with us and creates this existence, but only those things which we observe actually exist. There's really an interesting thing. Personally, I resolve that all by falling back on the notion that whenever we start talking about God, it is not in our best interest to try to get extremely rigid and systematic and rule-based, because God is not. I think he built us a universe that is systematic and rule-based so that we would have the joy of discovery and the joy of investigation and the feeling of empowerment when we make an observation and a discovery, and we can then use that to our own benefit in some way. But I don't think it's useful to then, from our observations, decide that God is incapable of something or that the entire universe can be understood by a strict set of logical premises. And so when it comes to why are we still seeing quantum effects even when God is the observer of all, my simple answer is, well, that's because he built the universe according to an interesting principle, and that principle was it is the glory of God to hide a thing and the glory of kings to seek it out. And so if he built this universe, he certainly would have the capability to decide when quantum effects manifest themselves and when they don't. And what's interesting about all that is that if we truly do have an effect on reality, as we seem to from the double slit experiment, then what that might mean is the same thing that I've been saying for years, and that is that faith and belief and the manifestation of the supernatural is baked right into the universe. That in fact we are built on eternity, because the quantum level has a lot of characteristics that sound like eternity. And that God has constructed us in such a way that we can access that eternity under certain circumstances, which are dependent on us. And if it's true that that supernatural manifestation happens in this transition between the quantum world and the classic physics world, there's no really way to fake this. You can say your little mantras over and 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 over again, but that doesn't really matter. What's really affecting your life and your surroundings and the manifestation of the supernatural, what's really affecting them is that core belief system that you have, that's ingrained in you from the time you're little. So it makes it an interesting quest, if that's all true, that you have to get to the point where you change your mind. And perhaps, as we've mentioned before, the path to changing your mind is not necessarily in giving up all your goods and relationships and abandoning everything to be a hermit and walk around. But maybe the key to changing your mind is to simply engage in those things that hermits and monks often engage in, and that is meditation. Quieting the mind, moving it into a different state, training it to be perceptive in different ways. I don't know, it's really interesting. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.